gotta be tough. Some of you have seen the circumstances where they have these gangs and they beat you into a gang. You go, why would they beat people into a gang? It's because you've got to be tough to survive. Because being soft is the worst thing they can say about you. Because if you're soft, you're vulnerable. If you're vulnerable, you're going to get got. It's the way it works. You can't be soft. You're not allowed to be soft. You're not allowed to have a childhood. That's a luxury you can't afford if you intend to survive in this community. And when you meet these kids, understand something. That veneer you see when you say, God, those kids are tough. Yeah, they are, because they have to be, or they wouldn't be standing in front of you. The way it works. That's the difference between that reality that some people face and that reality of privilege that we face. The ultimate goal is to get out. And we'll come back to this later. But it's important to understand that when you're caught in this reality, the ultimate goal is simply to get out of here. And when folks find you and think you might have some resource, they'll make sure that they do everything to help you get out. When I was a kid, I used to run with some guys, and these guys would not let me go with them when they were going to certain places. And I read everybody jumping in the car. I'm ready to jump in the car too. You can't go. Why? Because you can't. And after a while, I discovered these my boys, these folk I grew up with, they wouldn't let me in the car because the stuff they were going to go and do was risky. Because they thought I had a chance to get out. They were protecting my chance to get out. All over these communities, you'll find grandmothers who will pull a kid aside and say, you got a chance to get out of here. Keep yourself straight. Be tough, because you got a chance to get out of here. And that's what debate offers to a lot of folks, is a chance to get out. But what I want you to understand is, that doesn't change the reality of that community. And we'll come back to that in a moment, too. I remind them of this. Kids tell me a lot of stuff. I think most of the important things that I learned from listening to kids. But one of these kids was telling me about, you know, you've seen the thing with the gazelle running on the plane and the lion starts coming down. And the gazelle start running back and forth and the lion's coming down. And you know that the lion's going to eat one of those gazelles, whichever the slowest one is. This kid said, that's kind of like in my community. Well, what do you mean? He says, well, when the lions start coming down, whatever configuration, you know they're going to eat somebody. And your deal is not necessarily to do battle with that lion. Your deal is just to outrun somebody in this community, because somebody's going to get eaten. And if somebody's going to get eaten, it's not going to be me. That means I have to outrun you. It's not because I have anything against you. It's just that I don't want to get eaten. And somebody's going to get eaten. So strap on your sneakers. Another thing that happens, and you'll find this to be true too. People who come from this reality are very suspicious of folks reaching out to them. And there's a legitimate reason for that, and that's because they've been slapped down so often. That when you come right down to it, when they see right through to it, it's because they begin to understand that people don't come giving stuff up for free. So one of the things that you're going to note, one of the things you're going to have to deal with is that suspicion that says, why are you doing this? And you'll need to have an answer to that question. But I'll come back to that again because it is important to look at that. Third point I want to make is that the wretchedness in this minority community remains out of our view, principally because when you're privileged and powerful, you don't have to see anything you don't want to see. You don't have to know about this. C. Van Woodward, who's a very bright white historian, indicated in one of his pieces that one of the prices you pay when you oppress people is that you don't know about the reality of the people you're oppressing. And the more I studied this matter, the more I'm convinced that he's right. And part of the reason you're right is because people don't want you to know about them. I laughed when I used to read some of the old tracts, and they talked about the inscrutable East. Well, hell, why would they want you to know about them when you're coming over to destroy them? I mean, why would you consciously let somebody know about how you do things, about where your point of vulnerability is, if you know in the end they're coming to get you? Inscrutable means wise man. When folk come to get you, you don't tell them anything about yourself. But the other part of that is that our reality, that is the George Washington slave's reality, becomes marginalized because it's not a significant portion of your day. Because what happens in our communities are aberrations. They're anomalies. They may be true, but they're not really significant. They can't force their way into our consciousness. So it's important to understand that the reason many people don't see it is because you don't have to. And there's something else that flows from that. And this is the piece that not even a lot of people in the minority communities understand. And that is, there's a symbiotic relationship between the welfare and the well-being of privileged communities and the deprivation that we find in minority communities. And you should be very clear about that. I mean, when we regale ourselves in the life that we're living and how wonderful things are, we need to know that there's a connection there. And it's only because we're on television that I will not talk about some of the anointed who I don't think should be anointed in the same sense, because their stature is dependent on the deprivation of minorities. Also, it's important, I think, to understand that there have always been people in minority communities who wanted to say something about our circumstances, but don't have a name. We don't control the particular name. We don't even control what happens in the TV. This is one thing that happens among black intellectuals, especially quite often, is when you see scenes on television where somebody got killed, we always figure that these reporters must scout out the hood to find the most ignorant sounding black in that hood to do the interview. Where they be going in that, that sounds easy. But see, now let me, you think about that. I want you to understand that. I want you to understand something. If that TV camera was not gone, if we were not making a presentation to the outside world, there would be nothing wrong with the way that lady talked, because we would understand what she was saying, and her meaning would be clear to us. And my understanding is that's what communication is supposed to do. But because it also takes some cultural manifestations with it, it embarrasses us. And I think that probably says more about us and where we are than it says about that lady. It says something about our duality when that light gets cut off and we need to present a certain face to people. Because if that light was not on, then there would be absolutely nothing wrong with that light. And we would be more interested in what she had to say than the form in which she said it, because we understand it. We're not that cut off from it. All right. The other part, of course, about not seeing it is because if we don't see it, then we really don't have to do anything about it. And we can go on and enjoy our stuff. Now, this is context. I wanted to say this because it's necessary before I say what I originally meant to say up here to say. We're really sort of embarking on a historic effort. We're reaching out to children from exploited communities, and we're inviting them, no, we're imploring these children to partake of this fruit, the bait, that heretofore has only been available in privileged communities. That's something historic. What we're doing is taking people who reside in this privileged community and say, what we're going to do is reach out to these kids from these impoverished, deprived communities, strike impoverished, I hate that word because that implies something I don't mean to say, some of the richest texture of life you can find can be found in minority communities. Deprived, exploited, oppressed communities, much more accurate. But what we're doing is reaching out and saying, okay, now we want you to come in and partake of this fruit. What is the first question that a kid from the streets of New York is going to ask? Why are you doing this? And that kid is accurate. Why are you doing this? What is it that makes you want to do? What's the trick? What's up? And it's a question that we all need to answer. You all need to think about that before you teach your first kid. Why is it? I thought about it. And one of the answers that, of course, is that we can get into George Soros' money by camping some Puerto Ricans. See, I'm not caught up in this hysteria about how we're going out and providing all of these things to people. See, I know that there were black people out there who needed stuff before Soros' money, and I know that there were debate programs before Soros' money. I've been to all of these schools, and I've looked at your trophy cases, and I know how long you've been doing this, and I know that before Soros opened that checkbook, a lot of you were totally unconcerned about these people. Didn't know they existed. Their reality was not significant. So I know there are a lot of people who are about this process because of a way to get into George Soros' money. And I say, fine, that's okay. Just be real about that, because there's some stuff that these kids are going to get that they need anyway. The other thing I know, though, is that there are people, Tuna just talked to you about being in this process about 15 years, trying to go out and find people, bring them into this process. Melissa's been doing this at least 1,000 years that I know of. Going out in the business, trying to get people, bring them in. So what Soros presents is just an extraordinary opportunity that I don't even know how to describe. I mean, I don't know why things like that happen. Certainly, in my community, things like that don't happen. It may have been that I was tipping around in their community at that point, and it happened. But it provides an opportunity to do some things that are roughly historic. And we need to understand that. The second question that a kid from the streets of New York is going to ask you, because you're trained to do that, is what's it going to cost me? What's it going to cost me? They're asking you, offer me this stuff. What do I got to give up? And that's important, too, because you determine that. Because to a significant extent, you determine that. You decide what they're going to pay. And sometimes it's too much. Tuna had asked me to share with you some observations I made a couple of years ago, I guess, about when I went to Claremont Men's College. So I was the first black kid to go to Claremont Men's College. And what's interesting is, and I'll explain Claremont to those of you who have never heard of, I came from Watts, which if you were like 20 years ago, you know where Watts was. We the ones that burned up the whole place. 103rd Street, Charcoal Alley, burn, baby burn, whole, all kinds of stuff comes from that. So that I'm coming out of Watts, and I'm leaving Watts, going to some place called Claremont Men's College. I'd never heard of Claremont Men's College. Nobody where I live has heard of Claremont Men's College. But they came to my place and said, we're going to give you a whole bunch of money to go to this school. They didn't tell me I was going to be the only black person there. Not that I think that would have made a difference, because in those days, remember, we're still operating on a mode of get out by any means necessary. Claremont is my ticket out. So I'm going to this school down at Claremont, and I very quickly discovered that I got more than one kind of problem. I mean, I'm not simply the only black person there. I'm about the only poor person in this whole place. And it has some ramifications. I mean, those of you who, and some of you have walked this path, and you know, I'm the only black person, I'm the only poor person here. And it makes a difference. And it has manifestations in all sorts of ways. I'm at the stage of the game now where I don't have to be cool anymore, as Melissa points out. And I can tell you that when I first went to Claremont, I was absolutely confused about who to talk to. I mean, I wasn't going to talk to this little white girl. People in my community didn't do that. But there was a little black girl there, too, and she was so fine. Everybody in the place wanted to talk to her. Couldn't talk to her either, because that might seem like it was being racially conscious. So who do you talk to? You don't talk to anybody. You go find a piano and play it. But it's the reality, because we had not captured that mindset. And what I found myself doing after a couple of years was learning how to succeed at Claremont. I became a Claremont man. Now, you need to know that Claremont is a small, privately endowed institution in Southern California. We regularly had Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, all of these were these were our people. So I am now a Claremont man. And after I became class president, I knew I had found the secret to succeeding at Claremont. I am now officially out of what? A couple of little peculiarities. Like, I never understood why it was that during the vacations, why when everybody used to get together and go home with each other, my invitation always got lost somewhere. That one I never got. Never really understood why it was that people would come to Maine. And that's what seemed to be absurd question. A couple of kids from England came to me and asked me to see my foot because they were arguing about whether or not black people had an extra bone in their foot, which is why they could run so fast. I never understood those things. But what I did understand is that I'm now a Claremont man, which means I am no longer, I have gotten out of what? So when I get ready to go back a while, now I'm not going back in a car like everybody else does because I'm still, my economics is still what, even though my physical and emotional state is Claremont. I'm sitting on the back of a Greyhound bus and I have my Claremont blazer on. We had a little blue blazer with the little cartouches on the collar here. I had my Claremont tie, which is a little striped cartouches with red and gray and some sort of little conservative thing. I had my Kenny loafers on. I had my gray slacks. Didn't smoke, but I went and bought one of those pipes, you know, you have. You know what I'm talking about? Had one of those. And I have a Latin book. I don't speak Latin either, but it is the biggest book I could take out of the library. So for my purposes, that made sense. I'm sitting in the back. Do you understand how stupid this is? I'm going back to what? I got this pipe, I got this book I can't read, I got these clothes that are uncomfortable. I'm going back to watch, but it's necessary because I have to show them that I made it out, because that makes me a hero. Because in my community, if you can make it out, that makes you a hero. That's too big a price to pay. Because when I got off the bus, I'm greeted by people who love me, who nurture me. I'm greeted by these guys who wouldn't let me get in the car because they knew something might happen and my dreams might go away. I'm embraced by my community and I feel silly because I'm standing here trying to be a, quote, Claremont man, which is the antithesis of what all of these people are. And my success is that I'm not like you all anymore. Too big a price to pay. It is too big a price to pay. And if that's what you intend to do to kids when they come here, to make them part of this debate establishment, turn their back on where they came from. One, you shouldn't do it, and two, it's not going to work because you're tougher than that. Because you're tougher than that. When they come here, though, something important is going to happen. They're going to lose theirs in a very important way. Because when we live in these communities, at a certain point, we begin to enshrine those communities. They become something larger than they are. And we begin to defend them. And we even deify these communities. This is the hood. This is where I'm from. This is a collection of very complex problems and people who have a lot of difficulty making. And that innocence will fall away because they'll see a different lifestyle. If we do what we're supposed to do, which is to give them the tools to be analytical, to think through problems, to see that there are different ways of looking at processes, when they go back, they'll never be able to look at these communities again the way they looked at them. And that's important. Because that chipping away that Tuna talks about has to be done from the community. You can't give anybody freedom. You can't give anybody freedom. They have to take it. And I'm sorry for those of you who are offended by that, but no, I'm not sorry. I really don't care about that. The reality is, people, you have to take it. And we have to arm them. We can't take it for them. One of the things that I learned along the way is that you can't fight the battle for folks. They have to fight it for themselves. But we can give them the tools. we can give them the resources that they need to transform that community. Now, they may come out of here, and they may absorb the tools and the resources and analytical skills and creative thinking skills that we want them to need, and they may choose not to put that as the behest of the community. And that's all right. That's not our decision. But something Tuna said the other day was very important to me. You never know when you have that kid who is going to be in a position where he can say or do that thing that's going to turn around that situation. And at a certain point, we develop a critical mass. And that, when that critical mass is achieved, then we can do some miraculous things. You're giving a party and you're inviting these whole new people. These are not the folks that you're used to partying with. These are completely different folks. And the question I have for you is, since you invited these folks, what are you going to do to make them comfortable at your party? See, you didn't have that problem with me. When we started in Georgia, you didn't invite me. You as the debate establishment didn't send me an invitation to say, come in. We're coming in anyway. Because we heard some noise in there, and we thought there was something going on in there that we could get. So we kicked the door then. We didn't wait for you to invite us. Because we think you got something we need. Different process here. We're inviting people to come in. You're inviting people to come into your place. I just did the side note. You need to clean your place up a little bit too. Because this ideal little spot you got out here, not looking all that good. Read the newspaper yesterday, it said 30,000 people a year committing suicide. You heard about the little adventure down in Atlanta yesterday. Guy walks in, spot goes down, he's blown away from 12, 13 people. You've seen what happens in the school. And people are committing suicide in a lot of ways. So you need to clean your little house up, but that's an aside. You're inviting folks into your place. And the question is, what are you prepared to do to make them comfortable? Some suggestions. And my list is, as I sat and listed, my list grew shorter and shorter as Tuna went over his list. But here's what I have left. Number one, be who you are. Don't try to be somebody that you're not. Be who you are, and the kids will accept you for that. One of the things that happens when you've been in an exploited community for a long time is you learn to read people real quick. You don't believe it work as I have with a group of long-term convicts and let them be in a situation with a bunch of what we call average folks, and they will read them just like that. Because you get used to doing it. These kids will see when you're not being real. They will know that, and they will reject you. Don't, quote, play them. They will know, believe me. Be who you are, because they understand that anyway. They know that anyway, and they will accept you for that. Be respectful. When I was a kid, when I was like in middle school, the quickest way to get in a really serious fight where I was talking about somebody's mother. You talk about my mother, I'm going to take you out. Sorry. Now you can do almost anything else, but say almost anything else. Don't talk about my mother. And I never understood that until I went to Claremont. And you talk about people's mother, Claremont, they didn't care. Like, well, that's your opinion. But I came to understand that. See, the folk in Claremont had something else going in their lives. That respect was not all that important because they had vision. Where I was, you know, this is it. What you see right here is what you got. You talk about my mother, that's talk about me. We got to go. Because if I don't, I'm allowing you to destroy something that's important to my very being. Now, if I had a bunch of other stuff, if I had a car at high school, you talked about my mother probably. Because I got somewhere to go. And if I had a car and money, I might have told you some stuff you could say. You know, that's a little weird. But you need to be respectful because it's very important. Acknowledge that there are some things which are more important than debate. All of them know that. Many of us don't know that. And the secret is, if it were not for debate, many of you could not be cool. But the reality is that there are important things that go beyond debate. Let me give you an example. I was in a tournament in New York, and they asked me to talk to this kid. And the kids have problems, he's doing this and that. Yeah. So the coach came up and said, we need you to go talk to this kid. Sit down with him. So why'd you act it up, man? I'm not acting up, I'm doing what I can. So, but you talking to people, you've been rumping, you should partner. He says, well, I've been having a bad day. So, well, what do you call having a bad day, man? I mean, why are you going to do this stuff? He said, well, yesterday my brother and my cousin were killed. And I'm trying to focus on this debate stuff, but he keeps coming back to me that these guys over there, and I know who they were, killed my brother and my cousin. Two things. One is, I told that kid, forget this debate. Forget this debate. Go talk to whoever you have to talk to the work about, because that's more important than debate. And secondarily, it says something to me about how important this kid thought debate was, that he even tried to come here and to debate on a day after his cousin and his brother were killed. And we need to know that. So we need to acknowledge the fact that some things are bigger than debate. And there are times when we need to scratch that surface and get down under there. Don't assume that you know anything about these kids just because you see them or you hear them. You know nothing. They are experts at mastering their vulnerability. You remember what we said before, that if you're in this deprived, oppressed community, if you're soft or if you're vulnerable, you get guidance. One of the ways you defend yourself about that is by being expert at hiding those soft spots. You should know that no 15-year-old kid is as tough as these seem to be. And they're not, but it's necessary to their survival that they be that. They're experts at that. But now, if you engage them as human beings, if they see you as being real, genuine, if they see you as coming to them straight up, they will share with you. And when they do, you need to treasure those moments because you're going to learn something about life you don't know about. You're going to have an opportunity to see a reality that most of you have no knowledge of. Everybody said that, let me just reemphasize it. You will learn as much about the world from these kids as they learn about you, and some of you more. But you have to be real. You have to respect them. You have to know that they have things to offer, and that they're not just going to come out and start talking to you. Because I've seen kids just get off the bus knowing people, and they get up and they start talking junk from the time their foot hits the floor, and none of it means anything. It's just how they defend themselves. And if you really want to know that kid, you've got to get them in a quiet point at which they're safe and they're comfortable and they understand that you're a real human being, that you have frailty, that you're prepared to concede, that you have vulnerability, and then they'll talk to you. And it is also true that before you teach these kids, you have to be able to engage these kids. That's true generally speaking, but especially true. Now, a couple of things I want to say in part. Special note to some folks who have come from the community and are now looking back. Now, I hate to keep picking on Melinda, but she said so many things that were so important and that echoed around in my consciousness for a while. We're sitting and talking, and Melinda said, When I get ready to go back to Detroit, and then I want to go back and meet my people, that all of them are gone, they're in jail. And I can recall a few years ago, I went back to California and said, let me go find my people. And all of them were gone, either dead or in jail. And what Melinda said, it was critically important. She said, you know, I feel like I need to do something to make their lives better. And that's something that many of us harbor. I mean, you know what the circumstances are. You know what's back there. You know in your heart that the people who perish there are every bit as good as you are. And what happens is you got the break and they didn't. Or there was somebody there, like the folks who wouldn't let me get in the car, who were looking out for you. And that you could just as easily have gone has nothing to do with merit, right or wrong. It has to do with the fact that you got the break and they didn't. You know people whose hearts were good. You know people who were bright, who are now gone because of that community. Because the community demands a certain percentage of our people. And you just happen to look out. And my message to us is, we cannot lose that connection. We got to keep going back, because that's where your people are. You have to be able to articulate and clarify issues that you know because you're from there. It's a reality that we share. And you'll learn after a while that it doesn't have to be a specific location. Does not have to be specific people. It's all the same circumstance. I deal with some Hispanic kids in the Bronx, and it's the absolute same as the kids from Buttonhook Bottom in Atlanta or the kids I grew up with in LA. And we have to make a way for them. Finally, this is an island. Debate really is a special kind of community. This is not real world stuff here. Most people have to leave here and go back out into the real world and do things. We've got to get to the point where we understand that we can help people. We can provide them with skills and understanding. We can provide them with a place to come and be welcome, a moment of safety, so that when they go back out in the world, they can make the changes that we think are all necessary. I'm extraordinarily pleased to be here. I'm excited to know that Tuna's chipping on this block with me. And we're going to keep chipping until we go away. And at some point, he's going to have to give his chisel to somebody, and I'm going to have to give mine to somebody. We're going to keep chipping away at this stuff. And at some point, we're going to make the real world approximate what we have here. And that's when we can all feel that those realities are emerging. Thank you. Thank you.